1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Thanks for coming back. Good to be here. We have a giant podcast for you. There's a lot going on in this one. This is a truly great podcast. I think one of the best we've had. I know I haven't done it yet, but I think when it's all said and done, it's going to be the one of the best we've had. Here's why. One, we get to talk about an absolutely fabulous pitching performance last night. Mike Montgomery was something special. Anytime there's a complete game shutout, it's special. But considering some of the other circumstances surrounding it, it made it even more impressive. And I'll touch on some of that coming up in a few minutes. We got plenty of reaction from after the outstanding start. We'll hear from Montgomery himself. We'll hear from both skippers. Dustin Akloe had a great game as well. So a lot coming your way with the game last night. We'll preview the matchup tonight as the Mariners look to take the series from the Kansas City Royals, which would be pretty big, coming off of a series win against the Houston Astros. So a big game tonight for the Mariners. So we'll talk about that coming up. And timing can be a very funny thing. And we all get to be the benefit of some funny timing. So a few days ago, essentially right before Edgar Martinez was hired as the hitting coach, Mike Blowers and Edgar Martinez sat down and basically just talked hitting for about 20 minutes. And it was right before he was hired, and they talked about, you know, how the game has changed now, what Edgar was doing at the time with Mike, talking about some of his philosophies, some of the things he did as a player. I think it is incredibly fascinating, and even more so now, in the position he's in as the Seattle Mariners hitting coach. You get an insight at some of Edgar's hitting philosophies, some of the things he thinks about both mentally and physically, and swings and approaches, and it is fabulous. So that comes up in a few minutes after we talk about the game last night and preview the one tonight. You're going to hear 20 minutes of two ex-teammates talking hitting, Mike Blowers and Edgar Martinez. It's great. I think you really will enjoy that. So, first things first, man, yesterday, in the first inning, if I would have told you with the bases loaded and nobody out that, yeah, it's going to be fine, Mike Montgomery is just going to go on from here and pitch a complete game shutout, would you have believed it? Because the water was pretty warm in the first inning. Base hit. Hit by pitch, they are loaded up with nobody down in the first inning. He gets a huge strikeout of Eric Hosmer and then a big, big double play.
The pitch on the way, Morales with a swing and a ground ball. Wide at first, up with the ball is Morrison down to second. One, the throw back to Montgomery, covering in time, double play. Holy smokes, 3-6-1. And Mike Montgomery gets himself out of a bases loaded, no out jam. They get Kane at second, and they double up Morales at first. Logan Morrison to his right got to it. Down to Miller to get Kane at second, and back to the pitcher Montgomery in time at first.
Amazing. Amazing. Out of the inning, bases loaded, nobody out, and he gets out of it without a run. And then he's walking the tightrope again in the second inning, not all on him, an error on Logan Morrison, a single, so runners on first and second with nobody down, and this time he's playing punch out.
The 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss, strike three, and he comes back to strike out the side. Holy smokes, what a great rebound again by Mike Montgomery, two on, nobody out in this inning, and Montgomery leaves the Royals a-wanting here in the second. Three strikeouts here in the inning, four for the ball game already. What a start for Monty.
Yeah, no doubt. He goes the first four scoreless against KC. And then you look at the numbers. Guthrie, he's got the highest ERA coming in, highest active ERA for any starter with 10 or more starts against the Mariners. He has struggled at times in his career against the Mariners, to say the least. He's given up plenty of home runs as well. Mariners didn't touch him in the first three, and a couple of opportunities, but in the fourth, they would break through for the first time.
Bases loaded, one out, the stretch, and again the 3-2, and it's inside, ball four, a bases loaded walk for Brad Miller. That is going to force in Kyle Seager from third, and the Mariners have taken a 1-0 lead.
Yeah, they got the merry-go-round going a little bit. They scored three runs in the inning, so a three spot in the fourth, a 3-0 lead at that point. In the top of the fifth inning, Moore Montgomery hangs another zero on the board, and the Mariners get right back to work in the fifth.
The 0-1 pitch, swing and a line drive down the right field line. This is going to be a fair ball in toward the corner. Cano to second, up with the ball, Rios. The throw to second, not in time. Cano slides in safely. Robbie's bat really heating up over the last week. A drive into the corner, and Cano is on its second.
That was great to see. He had two more hits in this ballgame, also scored a run. Mariners would score, speaking of a run scored, Seth Smith would drive him in with a base hit. So the Mariners tack on one more. It's 4-0. Then Dustin Ackley, who has had plenty of success against Guthrie in his career, he'd go deep.
Here's the 2-2. Swing and a well-hit ball deep into the gap in right center field. And this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Just clears the wall in right center to the left of the 380 marker. Dustin Ackley with his fifth home run of the season.
A big game for Dustin Ackley. 3-for-4, two runs, two ribbies, and just a triple short of the cycle. And it looked like in his last AB, he had a chance to get it, stroked it off the bat. But Kane, he's basically three outfielders in one. He covers so much ground. He tracked it down in the gap. So he takes away the opportunity for the cycle. But a big day for Dustin Ackley. He talked about it a little bit after the game, including a little conversation with Edgar Martinez along the way.
Before your last at-bat, the cameras caught you talking to Edgar Martinez in the dugout. What are you talking about with him before you go out there?
Yeah, he just he told me to get greedy. I think that's something you do. I think anytime you get two or three hits, you can get complacent. And he said just go up there and just get greedy. Go up there and be aggressive. Don't act like this game's over or anything. And I think that's key. I mean, I was able to barrel another ball in my last at-bat, and they got caught. But I think that's a key thing for us.
How close do you think that might have been to a triple for you?
Yeah, I would have had to have some help from Kane. He would have had to hit off his glove or something crazy. But that would have been cool. That would have been a cool thing to have a cycle today. But I'm just glad I barreled some balls up and able to build from that.
So big day for Ackley. And at that point, Montgomery just put it on cruise control. He really got things locked down. It was just one royal down after another.
Here's the 1-2 to Kane. He did go. He committed, got fooled. He's a punch-out victim. Back-to-back strikeouts, 8 for the night. And 14 consecutive retired by Mike Montgomery.
14 straight at that point. You can make it 17.
Breaking ball swung on and missed. Strikes out Gordon. That's strikeout number 9 and 17 consecutive hitters retired.
And coming out for the 9th inning, trying to get the complete game shutout, he'd get his 10th strikeout as well.
And again, the 1-2. Swing and a miss, and he got him. Strike 3. Got him with a changeup. He has retired 22 of 23. One away for the Royals here in the top of the ninth, and that is strikeout number 10 for Mike Montgomery. Holy smokes, what a night for Monty.
Yeah, what a night. And he would finish it off in style.
Montgomery looks in, the sign, the set. And the 1-1 to Gordon, swinging a chopper along the first baseline. Montgomery gets there. Underhand toss to Morrison. It's over. How sweet it is. Holy smokes, a complete game shutout for Mike Montgomery as he blanks the Kansas City Royals 7-0. The organization that drafted Montgomery back in 2008 in the first round. Holy smokes, Mike Montgomery goes all the way.
Yeah, the team that drafted him, the Kansas City Royals. This, I mean, this is intriguing on many levels. First of all, just complete game shutout is awesome. It's fantastic, and what a start it was. But then you consider the team that drafted him. He's already faced Tampa Bay. Of course, Kansas City traded him to Tampa Bay before trading him to Seattle. So he's already faced his two previous organizations. How about a 1.13 ERA against those two so far? 16 innings pitched, one walk, and 13 strikeouts, including shutting down the team that drafted him. How sweet that must feel. And speaking of the team that drafted him, here's some good reaction after the game from Ned Yost talking about, well, was it the Kansas City hitters, or was it just Montgomery being really good?
What Montgomery did was he went to a changeup, and his changeup was really, really good tonight. I mean, we swung at a bunch of balls out of the zone as a result of a really, really good changeup. So, you know, you still think, okay, we've missed opportunities. They miss an opportunity in the second inning. You know, and you just think, okay, this we'll get them next inning, we'll get them next inning. But, man, there was no more getting them after that. I mean, we didn't get another hit after the second inning until, you know, Morales has hit the ninth, but he just settled in. You know, he started spotting his fastball really well, mixing up that really, really good changeup and mixing in good sliders and curveballs.
Did you see a big difference in the quality of at-bats from last night to tonight, or was it just Montgomery?
It was Montgomery. I mean, it was changeup, yeah. I mean, you're kind of, why are we swinging at so many pitches out of the zone? But, you know, it was a change that it looked like it was a fastball, and then the bottom fell out of it. And, I mean, it started coming in as a strike, and then, boom, it just faded away. It was good pitching.
Yeah, it was. And, boy, you break it down, and it's incredible what ended up happening with Montgomery as he went ultra-efficient after laboring early on in the game. You know, after the fourth inning, he only threw 11 balls after the fourth, which is pretty amazing. He had 3 8-pitch innings. In the fifth inning, 8 pitches, 6 strikes. Sixth inning, 8 pitches, 7 strikes. Eighth inning, 8 pitches, 5 strikes. I mean, the seventh, he threw 13, 10 strikes. And the ninth, he threw 12 pitches, 10 strikes. I mean, wow. Remarkable. And here's what Lloyd McClendon had to say about his starter.
Wow. He did pretty good. You know, to think that he was in all kinds of trouble in that first inning, and to get out of that with a big strikeout of Hosmer and then the double play ball, and then shut him down the rest of the way. I don't think they got another hit until the ninth inning. So.
Well, I had 2 on and no outs in the second. Yeah. He struck out for him.
Oh, that was nothing. Yeah, after the first, that was nothing.
What? Watching him,
what you see? Well, I saw him. You know, he settled down. He started to really start to command the secondary stuff initially, and then the fastball came. You know, early on the fastball was up, but I think once he hit his stride, he's pretty good. He's pretty tough. You know, all his pitches were working, and you know, he was in and out. And he stayed down in the zone for the most part. Did a nice job.
Yeah, he did a real nice job. I mean, especially put in context, he's only a handful of starts under his belt, and here he is throwing a complete game shutout. But also put it in context of who he was facing, the Kansas City Royals. I mean, firstly, a team that can hit. I mean, we saw that the day before against Felix, batting 275 as a ball club. They're not going to take a ton of walks. They're going to go up there swinging. And they don't strike out, ever. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you look at it. So we'll start at the top with the team the Mariners played last series, the Houston Astros. No team has struck out more than the Houston Astros this season, 671 times. Now compare that to the Red Sox, who are second least amount of strikeouts this season in the big leagues. They fanned 462 times. That's a pretty wide gap, 679 to 462. Now, take this a step further. Kansas City now has fanned, including the game last night, 395 times. By far the least amount in baseball. I mean, the Red Sox, 462. The Royals, 395. They're not even at 400 yet. Meanwhile, Houston's knocking on the door of 700. that illustrates that Kansas City is not a team that strikes out. Yet, Mike Montgomery, he fanned 10 Royals. He is the first pitcher this year to strike out double-digit Royals in a ball game. Corey Kluber got 9. Danny Salazar got him for 9. But Mike Montgomery is the one that pushed it over the top and got him for 10. They haven't fanned off of one guy since last July. They fanned double digits against Kluber. But, you know, the complete game shutout, awfully impressive. But put it in that context, too. The 10 strikeouts, the team he did it against. I mean, that is excellent stuff and pretty remarkable stuff. What did his catcher see? Here's Mike Zunino.
I mean, I thought he made some decent pitches. I mean, they're a good hitting club. They hit some good pitches. And I mean, I thought he made some really big pitches to get out of that inning. And he had great stuff in the bullpen. We had talked earlier this week about how we want to establish his cutter a little bit more to righties. And, I mean, he threw that, I mean, excellent today. Down and in, and it set up the changeup.
He gets into trouble. Bases loaded. I mean, the game can take a huge turn there. And you don't see guys get out of that very often. What did you see from him, and how big was that?
I think he had his off-speed stuff working. I mean, he was comboing that cutter in with that changeup, got a couple really big strikeouts, threw a couple really good curveballs. And it's just something where, you know, in that situation, you need to limit damage. But he did a great job of getting out of there, not giving up any.
Yeah, in the first part of that, he was talking about what happened in the first inning. And that's when Mike Zunino said he threw good pitches. They just got base hits and made even better pitches to get out of it. So that was the context for what Mike Zunino was talking about. But, you know, you look at this start, and we talked about a couple days ago, Ronis Elias, Taiwan Walker, first time in Mariners history they had back-to-back starts of double-digit strikeouts, 10-plus strikeouts, and no walks. And it's funny, 31 times in Mariners history, 31 times in the history of the Mariners, they had starts of 10-plus strikeouts and zero walks before last Friday, 31 times. Now, three of the past five days, they've had a starter with 10-plus strikeouts and no walks. Ronis Elias, Taiwan Walker, and now Mike Montgomery. They've combined for 31 punchouts and no walks with a 2.01 ERA in this last turn. I mean, that is something special. And the other part of that, too, is all three of those guys in their last starts have either tied or surpassed their career strikeout high. I mean, Montgomery by a ton, so he sets it at 10. Walker set it at 11, and Elias tied it at 10. I mean, that is pretty amazing stuff as those three go around their most recent turn. And here's what Mike Montgomery had to say about the start last night.
I had a little more nerves going, and, you know, I tried to say it's just like every other inning, but definitely had a lot of, you know, emotions and just adrenaline, and, you know, it was just a good feeling getting that last out.
You still have a little of it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's you know, I still got that adrenaline going, and, you know, it's fun. It was fun.
You go back to that first inning, and next thing you know, the bases are loaded. No outs. So what's the first thing you tell yourself in that situation?
You know, I really wasn't sharp to start the game, and I just was like, hey, you know, let's just keep the damage down. And, you know, I got that double play, which was huge, and then I kind of just started to get more comfortable as the game went on and just, you know, kind of just tried to run that, you know, confidence level of executing pitches.
Second inning, a little bit of trouble, too. Is that still not sharp at that point, or is that a matter of adjusting to what they're trying to do to you?
A little bit of both. You know, I got a little better from the first inning, and, you know, I kind of, you know, made some adjustments on swings they were taking and stuff. So, you know, and really once that third inning came, I kind of really just said, okay, you know, I feel good with what I'm doing, and it's just, you know, me and Z were on a really good page today, and, you know, just trusting stuff, trusting the defense, and trusting that's going to be good.
Hey, tell me that wasn't special against those guys.
Oh, yeah, it was fun.
I mean, particularly.
Yeah, you know, I probably had a little more emotion going in than I normally do. But, you know, I know a lot of those guys and was with them for 5 years, so it's, you know, it's definitely a little extra added on to it.
There was Mike Montgomery. I think another interesting aspect, I don't know how many of you follow the stat game score, a Bill James stat, and essentially what it is quickly, a starting pitcher starts with 50 points. You get 1 point added for every out recorded, and then 3 points for every complete inning pitched, 2 points for each inning completed after the fourth additionally, 1 point for each strikeout, and then you start subtracting two for each hit, four for each earned run, two for each earned run, unearned run allowed, and then 1 point subtracting for each walk. So that's what game score is. You see it in box scores now if you look towards the very bottom. And his game score last night, so complete game, shutout on four hits and struck out 10, didn't walk anybody. So he had a game score of 89. And just to put that in Mariners terms, historic terms, there's only been 23 starts in Mariners history with a better game score than 89. I mean, that's pretty rare company, an elite company. The best, as you can probably imagine, the best game score was Felix Hernandez, his perfect game, where he went 9, no hits, obviously, no walks, no runs, and struck out 12. He had a game score of 99, which is perfect. There's actually a game score that matched that in Mariners history. Eric Hansen, who pitched 10 innings in 1990, so you get the extra points for the extra inning, gave up two hits and no runs, no walks, and 11 strikeouts. And so he had a 99. You had Randy Johnson with a 97, a one-hitter. He struck out 15, walked one, gave up a run, not earned, a 92. I don't know. It's just kind of a fun number. If I were ranking some of these starts, it would probably look different than game score would look. But I think it drives home the point of the kind of start it was last night for Mike Montgomery and just how special it was. And again, from a guy that only has had a handful of starts under his belt, which makes it even more impressive. And he has given the Mariners everything they possibly could have wanted when he got called up. They badly needed someone to fill a hole, plug in a hole in the rotation, and he has done more than that. I mean, he's given them a chance to win every single time out. I mean, he's gone against the Yankees 6 innings, 1 run. Tampa Bay 7 innings, 2. Houston 6 innings, 1. San Francisco pitched into the 8th, 7 1/3, give up 4, and then complete game shutout. I mean, that is a nice run. That's more than a nice run from a guy just coming up to the big leagues. Okay, so that sets us up for tonight. And speaking of Roenis Elias, he is going to take the mound against the Kansas City Royals. Elias, 4-4, a 3.56 ERA. He was really good last time out against a dangerous Astros club. Kind of a funny start. His first pitch, a solo home run. His last pitch, a solo home run. Everything in between was dynamite. 7 innings, 2 earned, both solo blasts, no walks, and 10 punch-outs. That tied a career high. So he'll take on the Kansas City Royals as the M's look for the series. Now, the Mariners will go against Danny Duffy, who will be activated from the DL. Duffy, 2-3, a 5.87 ERA on the season. He's had a shoulder issue. He hasn't started since the middle of May. Last time out, 5 innings, 4 earned runs. Clearly something not right with him his last 3 turns. Against Texas, 3 2/3, 6 runs. Before that, Cleveland, just 1 inning, 4 runs. He had actually struggled in his first start, but then settled into a pretty good groove. He's a guy with tremendous stuff. Comes from the left side, has a live heater. He can really throw it. He hasn't been able to harness that ability yet. Had a nice run last year, a 2.53 ERA overall in 149 innings, started 25 games, but has not been able to stay healthy and has not been able to recreate that so far this year. We'll see what the Mariners can do with a hard-throwing lefty with really good stuff as the M's look for the series. 7:10 first pitch from Safeco Field. What fun is this going to be as the M's look for the series against the Kansas City Royals? Hopefully you join us. And speaking of fun, this is going to be fun. So we're going to hand things over now to Mike Blowers as he sits down with his former teammate Edgar Martinez. Sit back and enjoy this one. You get to hear a lot of good stuff on hitting.
Okay, Edgar, one, it's great to have you back here, but more importantly, why don't you just tell us a little bit about what it is that you're doing with the organization? You've obviously been around the ballpark a little more this year, and I know you're doing some traveling too.
Yes, I've been with the minor leagues, visiting the minor leagues, all the teams, also Dominican Republic, all the young players, and help them with hitting. And it's been fun. It's been great to. I already been pretty much to all seeing all the teams. It's been a lot of fun, fun working with the kids.
So when you go down and you're talking to the kids, what are a couple of the main messages when you get a chance to talk to them as a group? What would that be?
Concentrating two areas, working in the mechanic side and also in the approach side. And some kids have, mechanically, they have areas where they need work, and we focus in that area. But a lot of the conversation goes about approach, whether they have a plan when they go to the plate or how confident they're feeling on their abilities and things like setting goals, controlling negative thinking and be more positive and always talk to themselves in a very positive way instead of focusing on the negative. And things like that, it seems to really help.
And I know from knowing you for a number of years, those are things that you can carry out throughout your career, even if those guys are fortunate to get to the big leagues. That never changes, does it?
Yeah, it never changes. You know, in this game, and when you play it every day, you fail so often that it's very easy to focus on the negative side. So you have to control that and keep staying positive all the time.
Obviously a great major league career, but what people don't realize is it took you a while to get to the big leagues, even though every level you had a lot of success. And I would imagine at times that can be frustrating. Do you ever share that with them that, hey, you just didn't show up to the big leagues and start hitting 330 every year? Yeah. There's work that went into that.
Yeah, the stages where they are, you know, they're very young. They're 18, in some cases 17 to 20, 21, 22. And at that stage, they come to the league, professional baseball, and they have some doubts whether if they have 2 or 3 weeks that they're not doing that well, they really have doubts. They create doubts whether they belong there. And, right. and everything seems to get worse. So we talk about those things, and I share with them that my first year, I hit 170, 172. And I waited more than that. So it's you know, it happens, but if they keep working hard and they you know, open to suggestion from the coaches and try to work on staying positive, that believing that they have the ability, they can succeed within, you know, things change really quickly. 1 year from the other, they can be on their way.
And that brings me to my next question. So when you get to the big leagues, you're fortunate enough, you work your way through and you get to the big leagues. I found that the one thing that was different, and I realized it right away, was pressure. It went from developing and getting better. But once you get here, the expectations on you and the team are a lot different, and you have a lot more eyes on you for that reason. When you first got to the big leagues, after spending that time in the minor leagues, did you think about those things at all, or did you just worry about what you had to do that day to stay for another day?
Well, the first year, 87, I came up in September, and I came from winning a batting title, so I thought I was very confident, right? Very, very confident when I came to the big leagues, and I had, for the months, I did really well. But the next year I came, and I had, you know, I came to big league camp, and I didn't do so well. So I went back to the AAA. And it was until 89, I think it was a year where I was more consistent. But yeah, the expectations are higher. In here, it's more focused on winning. Minor leagues is more focused on development. And in here, you come to win. You have to produce. If not, you're going down. So it took, you know, some time for me to actually control that and focus, just being more focused on playing the game with my abilities and be positive about playing the game under those situations.
And over the course of your career, and I know that things change and you make adjustments to different things, but can you just talk a little bit about maybe midway through your career after you've already had the success and that, just kind of what your day would be like for a 7 o'clock random game on a Wednesday and what your day was like?
Yeah, I will start very early in the morning. I always wanted to sleep 8 hours, and so I will get up 7 in the morning, and if I didn't have 8 hours, then I will go back to bed. I have breakfast and then go back to bed. Wake up about 10 o'clock and do my personal things that I needed to do. And then after that, I will have lunch. And I will work in my eye exercises. And then I will come to the stadium about 2 o'clock and take care of my legs and get in the whirlpool or something like that and get loose. And about 3:30, I will be in the cage just working on my hitting on the tee. Then get ready for batting practice. After batting practice, we come in, have something light to eat, and I will work on my eyes again. Then the game. And after the game, I will go, and that was my workout. I will work in weights and train and get ready for the next day and do the same pretty much every day.
And that can be challenging at times because of all the travel, and you go on the road, facilities are different. What you have to do is different, so you have to make adjustments accordingly?
Yes, you have to, but you have to have that plan. In my case, I thought that sticking to this plan, that's what it will help me have success and accomplish my goal, which in my mind, I always wanted to win the batting title every year. It didn't happen that way, but that was my goal. And hit well over 300, but I feel that I needed to do all these things so I was ready to get 3 or 4 hits that night. So everything was for a reason.
One of the other things that I remember with you, and unfortunately it was because of an injury that you had in 93, it gave me an opportunity to play a little bit more. And I tell people all the time how generous you were as far as helping me. I said, but the thing that I think young players today have to remember is I had to go ask you, you know, and that's kind of the way it works. You have to go and ask these guys that have been around what works and what doesn't work. And, I mean, you helped me with pitching and all that. And I saw you do that throughout your career. And I think that it's important to have veteran guys on your team that are willing to share things with the rest of the guys if you want to have team success.
Yeah, it is important because some of the young kids that come, especially today, it's a lot of young players. They play in the minors 3 years and they're in the big leagues. So it's important to help them, you know, with the opposition, the pitchers, and also mechanically and how to think, you know, and be more of a team player, play to win, and all that stuff. It's always very important to have players. You know, the more you have players like that, the better the teams. And I think those years that we have success here, we have about 5 players or 6 right. players that will do this kind of stuff. And I think it's one reason why we have so much success.
And you mentioned minor league and having at-bats. It used to be that we all had to put in a certain amount of time down there before you got here. And I think that was a big help once you got to this level, because you're going to fail down there without the pressures of here, and you have to learn how to come out of those things. And sometimes here it can be a lot more difficult, one, because of the talent you're against, but two, the pressures of it too.
Yeah, the pressure in the big leagues is a lot more pressure to win, and it's not a lot of patience. They send you back right away if you don't produce. But it's important to play many years in the big leagues, in my case, because you are able to go through the ups and down, and when you come up, it gives you confidence. You know you can get out of it. But if a kid, when they haven't gone through all those ups and down, and they come here and they fail, they probably doubt themselves that they really belong here, and it can be, it's more difficult if you don't go through it in the minor leagues.
I know for myself, I was fortunate when I first broke in with the Yankees. I had an opportunity to talk to Don Mattingly quite a bit, and then when I came to Seattle, there was you. When you were struggling, who'd you go to?
You know, I was able, I think it was 1989 or early 1990, I went to a bookstore. I love to go and watch players like Don Mattingly, Kirby Puckett, and George Brett, and to learn from them what they do in practice and in the game. I always was very make sure that I look at them so I can learn mechanically. But within myself, I knew that I needed to build like a routine that I had mentally that I can be consistent. And I went to a bookstore and I found this pamphlet in the bookstore in the self-help section. And I learned about all these things, about performance, how the mind works, you know, have to do with setting goals, self-talk, self-esteem, affirmations, visualization, all this stuff. And it gave me some routines and some things that I could do to stay positive, to, you know, if I doubt myself in some occasion, I can go back to these things, things that I will write down or things that I repeat in my mind, that it will keep me positive. And I think it was really important for me to get that. I'm glad that I found this information because it will give me confidence and I will work hard at it.
And that's something, Edgar, that all of these guys can do. That information is available.
It is available. And I think, you know, even now I'm working with a group, you know, that is developing a software or a platform to teach athletes some of these concepts. But this is information that is available, and it's companies that also teach this information. The challenge, I think, is apply it in baseball. Most of this information is available for corporations.
Right.
But how you apply it for baseball, and I think it's very easy to apply it. It just works in baseball and business. It's kind of the same for both.
Okay, so we've gone through the mental aspects and the things that you used to do, your conditioning, your eating habits, all those things that are so important. So let's talk a little bit about mechanics and the swing. I've said to people many, many times that, especially for a right-handed hitter, the best swing that I ever saw was the home run you hit off of Maddux in the All-Star game.
Huh.
And I say that because I don't think people understand how much that ball is moving in on your hands and how difficult it is to not only pull that ball, but to keep it straight and fair. And I don't think that there's another right-handed hitter on the planet that would have been able to do that. And I always talk about staying inside the ball. Why don't you talk a little bit about hitting in general and using the entire field and staying inside the ball and what you have to do?
Yeah, and hitting, you know, it took a lot of work for me to be able to stay consistent with that swing. But I wanted to work in the tee, basically. The way I want my swing in the game, I want to repeat it. It's a repetition. So I will repeat that swing over and over pretty much every day. I will take that into batting practice, and in the game, I just don't think about it. You know, that's the goal. I don't have to think about my swing. I don't have to think about where my hands are, my feet, because the mind only can focus on one thing at a time, and you want to be able to focus on what he's going to throw. So I work all the time on the swing, and I wanted to be able to, with my mechanics, to pretty much use the whole field and be able to drive the ball to all fields. So I will do the same routine over and over pretty much every day.
So the thing that I know, and it's how I basically learned how to hit off of the tee from watching you and talking to you about it. But what people don't understand is hitting the inside of the baseball, and that's where it starts, is on that tee drill. And it's really a focus and a concentration on a specific point of that ball and trying to get the barrel to it. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the one drill that I used to do, I will get the tee very close to me, and it will force me to bring the hands close to my body, and the body I have to be behind the ball to hit, but also I needed to finish high.
Why?
Because it will eliminate the cast, like going around to hit that pitch. And it will, if you repeat it, stay in, and finish high, then the ball is not going to the left side like hook. It will stay pretty much through. It's just going through.
Right.
And that's what one, you know, finish high can help you with that.
I had a smile on my face when we were on the road trip. I saw something that I hadn't seen in a long time, and I saw Nelson Cruz taking batting practice with a donut on his back. And I said on the air, I said, I haven't seen that since Edgar did it. And I remember talking to you about it, and then I went out and was doing it for a period of time too. Can you talk a little bit about that drill and where that came from?
Yeah, I used to have the donut with me all the time. And it builds my strength, my grip. And that was one reason. Also, you know, when you hit with the donut, it's more weight. So when you take it off, the bat feels very light. So the speed of the bat going through the zone will be faster, much faster. So it's almost like it will give you more bat speed. And I don't know exactly, I don't know how to explain how that worked, but I felt like when I take the donut off, my hands will be so much quicker.
So it's a lot like you've seen some people, they used to work out and they'd put those weights around their ankles, and then when they would take them off, they would feel a lot faster. And the other part about it, too, to me, and the reason why I like to do it is because with that donut out there, you really have to be aware of where the barrel is at.
Yeah.
And it's not a drill that young kids should be trying or anybody else. Yeah. These are for professionals. But to me, I always felt like, one, to hit with that donut on there, because it is heavier, I have to be able to control the bat, so I have to be in a better position.
Yeah.
But two, I also need to know where that barrel is so I don't hit it off the donut and one hits me in the eye or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's exactly the way it works. You have to be more in control. And now I remember that will help me with my stride. I could not overstride with the donut. I have to be short with my stride so my hands can work a lot better. See the pitch, wait, short stride, and then just basically drop the bat to the ball.
Let's talk about some of the things that have changed. And I know that you've made the comment before. I've said it many times. I think that hitting today in a lot of ways is more difficult than it's ever been, just because of the kind of arms you see every single day and the guys coming out of the bullpen. And so I think it's more difficult, but I still think that there are certain things that you can do if you're out there every day working on the same things to help yourself out. But just what you've seen from the game and the way it's transitioned over the years, and kind of when you watch a game, whether you're here at the ballpark or you're home watching on TV, what are some of the things that you're seeing in the game and maybe some of the reasons offenses across baseball are struggling right now?
Yeah, I think it's we've seen – actually, I was talking to Raul yesterday about this. It's more concentration on pull and hitting in the back leg that I haven't seen in a long time. The years that I played, there were a lot more players that will transfer the weight from the back leg to the front leg. And one classic example would be Frank Thomas. Well, sometimes he will swing and his back leg will be
off the ground
at contact.
Right.
That allows you to use the whole field because you're transferring pretty much 100% of your weight from the back to the front leg. I don't see many players that can hit that way, or I haven't seen it in a long time. That way they're not using the whole field with power. When hitters hit in the back leg, it's going to be a pull hitter. It's true, the pitchers, much better. I've seen, you know, from my last few years, everybody that came from the pen was throwing high 90s. And now pretty much everybody that come in, they have to throw over 94. 88, at the beginning when I came to the big leagues, and most of the years, it was 88 to 93. Yeah. 93 was like, this guy throw hard. Now 93 and up.
Yeah.
It's not very few throwing 88, 89. So it's also, you know, splits and more pitches, cutters, it's just the pitching. It's more information. It's more accurate information. It's, you know, the shift is one explanation of that. It's so many players that they're using, you know, the teams that are using the shift. So I think that the information that is the teams have right now, you can be a 300 hitter, but they still have information. You might don't hit when you hit in the field. There might be a, where you hit the ball in the ground. Let's say they have every player playing you straight, except the second baseman. The second baseman will be almost behind
second base.
Second base.
Right.
I think it's more information. That's one reason relievers and they throw harder right now.
And it's rare to see the starter three or four turns in a game anymore. There's constantly somebody different out there all the time.
Yeah, more specialists. So I think those are the reasons why it's been more difficult for the hitters right now.
Let's talk about the shift real quick, and this will be the last thing. Just your basic thoughts on it. We had Lou up here, and I asked Lou about it, and Lou's answer was pretty simple. Just hit the ball the other way, which I thought, you know, makes a lot of sense but difficult to do. But can you talk a little bit about shifts and where you see that going and maybe as a hitter what you can do to maybe beat it so that you could straighten them out a little bit more?
It's a very interesting thing. I mean, it's kind of hard for a player that has been hitting one way for many years and then, oh, I have to change because of the shift. It's really hard. There's players that try to change and they don't have success, so eventually they come back, okay, I'm just going to pull. But I think one thing that they can do is move up on the plate and just hit the same way you hit or move back or move closer. That's one without changing anything and see if that way you can beat it.
Kind of creates different angles for you when the ball comes off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, if I guess the way I position myself on the plate can affect the way where I hit the ball. If I'm pulling the ball and I want to hit the other way, one thought that I will have, my top half, I will put it more over the plate, move up in the plate, and that will give me the chance to get to the outside pitch to hit it the other way. There is a few things that you can do. You can work on your swing path, stay inside the ball more. Some players can do that, some others can't.
Edgar, thanks for your time, bud.
My pleasure.
You got
it.
Good
to see you.
A base hit gets the Mariners even here in the ninth. Here comes the stretch by Gibson. The pitch on the way to Martinez. Swung on and belted. Deep to left field. It will fly away. And the Mariners win it 3-2. Martinez with his 11th home run of the year. The M's were sitting and waiting and hoping, and Edgar Martinez does it with the long ball. What an end to this one out here tonight. It was a long ball show all the way. All the runs scoring on home runs, and the M's come from behind and win it and send over 12,000 home happy. I don't believe it.
See you later!